It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
A vehicle ploughing into pedestrians at Finsbury Park in North London just after midnight. Police say at least 8 people have been hospitalised, with 2 facing very serious injuries. One person died at the scene, but police stress it may not be a direct result of the attack. The individual was already receiving first aid as it unfolded.
This act's already been described by the British Council of Muslims, the UK's largest Muslim organisation, as a deliberate act of Islamophobia. I'm Reuters' Jacob Greaves reporting from the crime scene, which is close to one of the UK's largest mosques and comes during the holy month of Ramadan, when people attend nighttime prayers.
Authorities are yet to give any motive for the attack, but British Prime Minister Theresa May has said police are treating it as a potential terrorist incident. In dramatic moments immediately after the incident, police say the van driver was initially detained by members of the public before an arrest was made. The restraint shown by those people commended by police. The detained 48-year-old is set to undergo a mental health assessment. It is believed he acted alone. Eyewitnesses described the events as they unfolded.
Basically drove on the pavement, coming straight towards all the Muslims, and as he's coming to them, he hit all of them.
And the van literally turned left with no indication, with no even, like, sadly, just deliberately left, and they just hit the people.
The incident comes after a string of attacks in the UK in recent months. Earlier in June, knife-wielding militants drove into pedestrians on London Bridge before attacking passers-by. Ticker tape and police cordons, an increasingly common sight on UK streets, as police assess the motive behind this latest attack.
While you were sleeping, another maybe, possibly, terror attack in London. The reason I say it that way is because this is a little bit hard to discern. I heard a report yesterday that this particular area of London, this is outside of mosques, is Ramadan, but it's also, I heard an eyewitness say there's an evangelical Christian church there. There are all kind. Now, you know, who knows what eyewitnesses are saying, but it's kind of, according to the witness that I heard, kind of a mixed area. But of course, Muslims on the street are now claiming it was a terrorist attack against them. They're claiming that the driver had a knife, and the police are saying that's not true. They're claiming that there were 2 more people in the van. The police are saying that's not true. They're also claiming that the gentleman said, "I've done my bit, and I would do it again." And we don't know if that's true or not. He is certainly white. I've seen a picture of him. And they also said that they took him off for psychological evaluation. Well, that's what, you know, who knows what that means, because they always say that when it's a Muslim terrorist, they always say it's a mental illness. So you just really never quite know really what the truth is. And based on past incidents, I can tell you that the Council for American Islamic Relations, which is an American organization, is of course joined at the hip of the Muslim Brotherhood in England, and their modus operandi is to lie about these things. And so I would say that the London Mayor Sadiq Khan, the first Muslim, of course, to serve in that position, said police would be deployed. He called this incident a horrific terrorist attack. And yet, they don't know if it's a terrorist attack, but it could be a terrorist attack. It could be a white Brit going after Muslims after Ramadan. The other interesting thing about this, the one person that was killed, the reports now say that he was being attended by people out of the mosque for something else, that he was having some sort of an episode, and that they can't be sure that he died from this van. So I don't know. Obviously, the van hit people. Obviously, one person is dead. Those things we know to be true. But other than that, not sure about the rest of it. So we'll be listening for the rest of the day for sure. And by the way, while you've been busy over the weekend, one of our ships, this happened on Friday night. The USS Fitzgerald was passing through one of Japan's busiest shipping lanes just south of Tokyo. And it was rammed by a 29,000-ton cargo ship out of Indonesia. And six American sailors, have been killed. The captain of the ship had to be airlifted off the ship. They say he's in serious condition. It was his cabin that was struck, I don't know how, compared to the others, but it was pretty much demolished. Brian McGrath, who was a former destroyer captain, I am reading this from the Wall Street Journal, said collisions at sea for the U.S. Navy are extremely uncommon. They only occur maybe once or twice a decade. Also, as I was reading, it says that ships in these very busy waters often will use, like, go on autopilot. And the person weighing in on this said that it could be that both ships were on autopilot and they just, something happened. So we don't really know. You know, we don't know if the American ship was targeted. It's much, much smaller than the cargo ship. So the investigation will continue. But the point, of course, for us, the most important point is that six U.S. American sailors have been killed, and they've now identified who they are. So you'll be seeing that throughout the day. And one last thing on some things that have happened in the last few hours. The Pentagon has, the U.S. has shot down a Syrian aircraft for the very first time. It shot it down yesterday, a Syrian Air Force fighter jet that bombed local forces aligned with Americans in the fight against the Islamic State militants. So it shot down the Syrian, we shot down a Syrian aircraft. I have no added information about that, no opinion. I'm just telling you that's what happened. Before I go into more of what's going on, and certainly there's plenty, never a want of information. Just, this is interesting. So, and I don't often do this, but this day, back in history, 1862, Congress abolished slavery in all of its territories. On this day, it's June the 19th of 1862. And on this day in 1885, the Statue of Liberty arrived in boxes from France. Isn't that something? This day in 1885. And then this is another really interesting event in history. In 1953, June the 19th of 1953, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were executed for conspiring to sell our atomic secrets to the Soviets. They were deemed spies and they were put to death. And this is what we used to do with spies, with people that leaked information to foreign powers. This is what we used to do. And so, and many would trace the hatred of Richard Nixon and others on the broad spectrum of the right, the hatred of them to this execution. There has always been and has been for a very long time a very strong strain of communism in our country. Up until recently, we weren't even allowed to say that because we were silly for saying such things. But it's not silly. My husband and I just last week drove through Madison, Wisconsin, went to the campus of the University of Madison, and which is gorgeous. It's just absolutely gorgeous, so beautiful. Many of you may have sent your kids there. But of course, you have to know that that is the heart and soul of American communism. It started a long time ago, and some of the worst radicals in this country, the intellectual center that was Madison, Wisconsin, was also New York City. A lot of people who came out of those areas whose parents were communists are called red diaper babies. David Horowitz was one of those. And it was interesting to me as we were walking around, and I thought, and also before that, we were in Minnesota. And Minnesota, of course, is famously very far to the left in terms of their politics. And it just occurred to me that these are communities that can enjoy the luxury of intellectual leftism. They can entertain the notion that, you know, we should have universal health care because they have health care. They have good health care. They can entertain the notion that the borders should be open because they honestly have very few immigrants. It's pretty much like America used to be in Madison, Wisconsin, also in Minnesota. So it's not like visiting Washington, D.C. It's a very different experience. And so everything's very clean because we have a lot of immigrants from third world countries who don't know anything about, you know, how to use bathrooms, cleanliness. If you go to public facilities, they're being trashed everywhere. I think we may not say it, but we surely know it. But that not so with Madison and Minnesota and places in Minnesota that we visited. They so they can wax eloquent about all this intellectual stuff about the left and about opening the borders and having health care for everyone because they have great health care and because they are not experiencing and living the side effects, the results of their really leftist policies. And so just an interesting thought I would share with you. All right. Well, you know, while I was gone, this terrible shooting took place at the baseball game in Alexandria, which is very familiar territory to my husband and I. And so it was very upsetting. It reminds me of when I was in Turkey, in Istanbul, in the airport, the day that Nidal Hasan shot up Fort Hood. I'll never forget that, sitting in the airport watching that and just barely able to contain myself, just beside myself with anger and frustration. And I have to say, as I was watching it on a television in a public place last week, it was the same thing. And people's response was just amazing to me, either the lack of it, the lack of concern, or just when President Trump spoke, one man where we were sitting started to laugh. It's just amazing to watch what's happening in this country. But let's talk about what's happening in the aftermath of this. Rodney Davis is a congressman from Illinois. He's not very conservative, I have to tell you, but he was in that ball field and he was there when Steve Scalise and five others were shot. And I want you to hear what he had to say in his interaction with Chris Wallace yesterday. Let's listen.
You know, Chris, it's still pretty surreal. I can tell you this is the best Father's Day I've ever had, to be able to come back home and see the outpouring of care and support from the people that know me best, including my family. It has just been a really humbling event and very memorable for me and my family.
Have you gotten over it in an emotional sense, or are you still in shock?
You know, people tell you how you're supposed to feel, but it never seems that you do. I mean, I still sense normalcy. There are times when I'm probably a little more agitated. There are things that I'm going to do differently in my life and in my workplace to ensure that we probably put security more as a priority than we had in the past. And that's a sad state to be in when you just woke up a few days ago, got in a car, and went to a baseball field to practice for a charity game, and next thing you know, bullets are flying.
I want to take you back to just after the shooting. Here you are, sir.
This political rhetoric and political discourse that has led to hate has led to gunfire. I called my wife and my children immediately when I got a hold of a phone. They told them I love you. And Dad's okay.
That was a very emotional. That was in a moment. I wish you could have seen his face. But of course, one congressperson, part of the Black Congressional Congress out of, I believe, Nebraska, was talking about how funny it was, how it made her laugh to watch the Republicans talk about that incident on the field. It was amusing to her for some reason, very amusing. And so Rodney Davis tells his story. And then I want to talk about the reaction in just a second, but I want to give you an update because Steve Scalise, who I have criticized a lot, but my point in telling you what I'm telling you now is that when people, whether it's Gabby Giffords or anyone from any stripe, is shot in a situation like this, it is sobering, and we care, and our hearts go out, and we're concerned. And we know that these things are life-changing, and there's certainly nothing to boast or laugh about. When we come back, I'm going to tell you, I want to tell you before we take this break, that Steve Scalise has been upgraded from critical to serious, and that is good news. He's had so many surgeries. His family's been around him. They say that he's going to live. They even think that he'll walk again. And that is, you know, wonderful news. I'll give you updates on some of the others in a minute, too. Plus, track with you the response to this in tangible ways. It is pretty amazing what we're learning about the shooter, more things. And we'll come back with that in just a second. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm
I'm Ryan DeFrates. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrates' Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrates' Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
The English philosopher Francis Bacon likened some men to the fly sitting on the axle of a chariot who said, "What a cloud of dust I have raised." That would be like a crowing rooster taking credit for the sun coming up every morning. Sometimes we take credit far more than we should. In the final analysis, there is very little for which we deserve credit. The Apostle Paul wrote in Romans that all things in life are of God and through God and to God, to whom all glory is due forever. That leaves precious little for us to boast about. This is David Jeremiah encouraging you to get on the road to new life. Discover why God is worthy of glory on Route 66.
Route 66, driving the word home. Log on to Route66Life.com and get your roadmap for life. Route 66, start your journey home today.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
These are difficult days for our nation, and difficult days require difficult conversations. In the aftermath of the violent attack on Republican lawmakers, there were bipartisan calls for unity. Well, that lasted about as long as a box of Cracker Jacks at the congressional baseball game. The name-calling and the vitriol has resumed. Republican lawmakers have been subjected to even more threats. But where does all of this hate come from? Why does the left want to silence those they disagree with? Well, to be perfectly blunt, liberals want to dehumanize conservatives. Instead of just silencing their speech, they call it hate speech. Instead of agreeing to disagree, they label conservatives racist, homophobic, Islamophobic, xenophobic. As Hillary Clinton so eloquently said last year, we are irredeemable deplorables. Words matter, folks, and as we learned last week, sometimes words have unintended consequences. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Okay, Sandy Rios back with you. Just I wanted to finish that update on Steve Scalise because it's so important. The doctor told us on Friday that there are hundreds of bullet fragments in Scalise's body, but we have no intention of trying to remove all of the bullet fragments at this point. We fully expect him to be able to walk and hopefully run. And then, of course, others were shot. There were Capitol Police officers, David Bailey and Crystal Griner. They had minor injuries, and they are expected to fully recover. Interesting to me, the House GOP aide, Zach Barth, isn't really, there's no description given of his, maybe he was shot in the chest, and I haven't heard any description. And even this in this article on Fox, they don't talk much about it. Lobbyist Matt Mitka was hurt pretty bad. He was shot multiple times, critically wounded. He's undergone additional surgery, and the doctors expect him to fully recover. So that's the story on that. And in regard to the shooter, you've probably heard this, but in case you haven't, you need to. A list has been found now, an assassination list on his body. At least they found it, I'm sure, right away, but we're just hearing about it. The FBI has it, and it turns out that it is six members of the House Freedom Caucus.
It is one thing to sort of want civilian to be and to take over.
Not the clip yet. Six members of the House Freedom Caucus, and they are Mo Brooks, Jeff Duncan, Arizona Representative Trent Franks, also Scott DeGiarlis, and Virginia Representative Morgan Griffin. All of them from the House Freedom Caucus, who to me are the stalwarts. They are the wingmen in Congress. I don't know what we do without them. And now they're on this list, this hate list. You know that Duncan and Brooks were both at the baseball game. The others were not. And Duncan said that Hodgkinson, you've heard, of course, that Hodgkinson, the shooter, came up to Duncan and another member of Congress and asked, who's out there playing? Who are those? Are they Republicans or Democrats? And Duncan said, well, they're Republicans, not having any idea that he had intended to kill anyone. We know that that the shooter, 66-year-old, supporter of Bernie Sanders, part of an organization called It's Time to Destroy Trump and Company. He also belonged to several anti-GOP groups on his Facebook, including one called Terminate the Republican Party. By the way, the members of that group celebrated Hodgkinson's mass assassination attempt after he shot four or five. It was Steve Scalise and four or five others. He spewed left-wing talking points on his Facebook and consistently railed against Republicans and the wealthy. He said, I have never said life sucks, only the policies of the Republicans. His widow didn't seem to know anything about it, which is very sad. Can you imagine? Her husband told her he was going to D.C. to work on taxes or do something. I'm sure he didn't tell her what he was planning to do. And then Bernie Sanders, his response to this. Remember, he says, I've just been informed that the alleged shooter at the Republican baseball practice is someone who apparently volunteered on my presidential campaign. I'm sickened by this despicable act. Let me be clear as I can be. Violence of any kind is unacceptable in our society, and I condemn this action in the strongest possible terms. Now, could I just say that if you were to look at Bernie Sanders' Facebook page or his Twitter account, guess what it says? It says, the revolution has begun. The revolution has begun. This is Bernie Sanders who spent his honeymoon in Moscow when Americans didn't go to Moscow because it was shut off from us because of the Cold War, because they were our enemies, because communism had its icy, cold grip on the people of Russia. That's where Bernie Sanders chose to spend his honeymoon. And trust me, when he speaks of revolution, he knows what revolution means. He knows about the blood that was shed, all of the millions of people that were killed by Stalin. Bernie Sanders knows all about that. So the revolution has begun is now telling us that violence of any kind is unacceptable. Really? I'm sorry, I'm a skeptic. I am a skeptic. It's possible for some of our younger kids, some of the millennials, to talk about revolution in the abstract. Bernie Sanders knows better. He knows exactly what happens in revolution, and he is declaring it has begun. And by the way, the shooter was a fan of the SPLC. And of course, the SPLC has their hate map, their hate list. And FRC, American Family Association, I think we're number one on their list. We're close to the top. James Hodgkinson loved the SPLC, liked the SPLC, and he has that in common with Floyd Corkins, who went into the FRC armed with a list of hate groups. We're not sure which ones, but he had a goal. He had a list of people he was going to mass murder, and they were people taken from the list, the hate list of the SPLC. We have been trying to get someone, anyone, to listen to the fact that the SPLC is nothing more than an ideologue hate group themselves who publish the list, the names of people that they disagree with on issues of Islam, issues of homosexuality, gay marriage, and declare them hateful. And I'll give you something concrete to base that on. Matt Staver in their Liberty Alert has printed this. It's an interview by Mark Potok, who's one of the founders of SPLC. Our criteria for a hate group, first of all, have nothing to do with criminality or violence or any kind of guess we're making about this group could be dangerous. It's strictly ideological. And then in a video, we see Mark Potok say, sometimes the press will describe us as monitoring hate crimes and so on. I want to say plainly that our aim in life is to destroy these groups, to completely destroy them. And I have to tell you, I have to go on record as reminding you that the FBI, under the leadership of Bob Mueller, now the special counsel, who has so much integrity, you see, the FBI uses, did under Mueller, the SPLC as their go-to group to identify hate groups. That means the FBI was going to them to hear that the American Family Association was a hate group. And for all we know, still is. They removed the SPLC logo from the FBI website. At least they did at one point. Whether it's there now, I can't say. But this is how dangerous this is getting. And the shooter not only liked the SPLC, the hate group, the SPLC, he loved Media Matters. He loved MoveOn.org. And, of course, he loved Bernie Sanders. And so there you go. That's what we know, the follow-up on the shooter. And now, what's the response been of the left to this? Well, there are lots of things I could say, and I'm sure you've heard a lot of them, as we've had some great guest hosts, Fred Jackson and Abraham Hamilton and Matt Barber, three of my favorites, said I know that they gave you great information and probably talked to you about the follow-up. I will bring to you your mind just a couple of these. HuffPost writer Jesse Benn tweeted last Wednesday that violent resistance must be organized to work. He wrote in his tweet, for violent resistance to work, it would need to be organized. Individual acts can be understandable, but likely counterproductive, ineffective. And then in June of 2016, he wrote an article entitled, Sorry Liberals, a violent response to Trump is as logical as any. And in the article, Ben said that there was value in violently resisting the normalizing of then-candidate Donald Trump. He writes, in the face of media, politicians, and GOP primary voters normalizing Trump as a presidential candidate, whatever your personal beliefs regarding violent resistance, there's an inherent value in forestalling Trump's normalization. Violent resistance accomplishes this. This is Jesse Benn, writer for the Huffington Post. And then he writes, in a response, a backlash on social media, for the record, blank Steve Scalise. So that's a writer for the Huffington Post. And that's just one example. On MSNBC, it's a little lighter. Oh, it seems nicer, the approach. But MSNBC host Joy Ann Reid spoke up just when Steve Scalise was still in extremely critical condition. And this is what she had to say. Cut five.
It is one thing to sort of want civility and to take umbrage when it's one of your friends, when it's one of your own colleagues. But like you said, there's a whole country out there. And a lot of people, at least in my Twitter timeline, and it's a delicate thing because, you know, obviously everybody is wishing the congressman well and hoping that he recovers.
Sure.
But Steve Scalise has a history that we've all been forced to sort of ignore on race. He did come to leadership after some controversy over attending a white nationalist event, which he says he didn't know what it was. He also co-sponsored a bill to amend the Constitution to define marriages between a man and a woman. Mm-hmm. He voted for the House health care bill, which, as you said, would gut health care for millions of people, including 3 million children. And he co-sponsored a bill to repeal the ban on semi-automatic weapons. Because he is in jeopardy and everyone is pulling for him, are we required in a moral sense to put that aside at the moment?
Okay, so that's the question. He is lying there in critical condition. Can't we talk about these terrible things he's done? And, you know, after all, we think he's a racist, which, look, the report is, I don't know about Steve Scalise. The report is that he went to an event sponsored by David Duke organization. He claims he didn't know what it was. So I don't, you know, that's the storyline there. He voted against an assault weapons ban. He voted against, what did she say, healthcare, something on healthcare. These are the reasons that make him evil. He voted that marriage was between one man and one woman. So these are the things, these are the terrible, no good things that they think, well, would warrant embracing these terrible things from their perspective about Steve Scalise are justifiably being discussed. They should not be pushed under the rug, even though he's lying there fighting for his life with his family. It is a strange thing, isn't it? How our hearts can become so hard. And I think all of us are susceptible to this when we dislike someone's policies. But I have to say that as Christians, there should be a tenderness in all of us when someone is killed or injured. There is a human condition there. And, you know, it is shedding blood. Taking someone else's blood is such a big deal to God. Genesis 5, as I said before, even before the commandments, long before they were ever given, God made it clear that taking the life of another human being or the attempted or the shedding of blood was very serious to God. And so we sort of pause in holy hush when we see people's lives hanging in the balance. But that's something that evidently is not factored in this discussion. And so then a pastor, NAACP board member, Reverend William Barber, spoke up, and this is what he said.
What we're required to say is we hope that when we hope he recovers, and then when he recovers, there's a renewed mindset. If a lesbian person saved your life, you can't, you should not go forward, you know, being homophobic. You shouldn't be it anyway. If you almost died, but your life was saved because you got health care, then you should apply that ethic and want everybody else the same health care you have. You know, the Bible, one of the guys that prayed, Walker, is from North Carolina, and he was saying how he prayed for everybody. Well, and he's a Christian. Well, the Bible says in Isaiah 10, woe unto those who legislate evil and rob the poor of their rights and make women and children their prey. The Bible calls whenever you just put on a face in a time of crisis but continue to do the same things, it's called making graves look good that are still full of dead man's bones. In other words, it's hypocrisy. If Congress people pray for one another, and they should, P-R-A-Y, but then if they pass policies that prey, P-R-E-Y, on the poor and on minorities and the sick, then we have a serious moral problem. And even our Constitution, George, says the only way you can get to domestic tranquility, the only way you can get to civility, is you must start with the establishment of justice, you must provide for the common good, and you must promote the general welfare. Changing the tone of words is not enough. You have to have a change in the trajectory of policy. Prayer is not enough. Faith must have works. So I'm praying that the brother gets up and lives and then comes back and says, you know, this experience has changed my thinking fundamentally, not just about myself, but about the policies I support.
You know, there's not much. I agree with probably at least a third of what the pastor just said. But what this reminds me of is Job's counselors. Some things right, but really, ultimately, off the mark. So a pastor is saying, a pastor, a Christian, a follower of Jesus, speaking as a pastor, is saying that Steve Scalise, if he should recover from this, he should remember that a lesbian saved his life. So he should stop being homophobic and resisting, you know, homosexual, radical gay rights, transgenderism, whatever. That's the lesson that Steve Scalise should learn. And that's what he's praying for him. See, that's twisted. And I have to say, the other things, you know, of course, if you have a life-threatening situation like that, we all pray that God, that we will be humble enough to let God use the tragedies of our lives, the sicknesses, the illnesses, the sorrows, the losses, to help us re-examine. But what we come out with on the other side must comport to what God teaches in Scripture. It can't be just some popular norm or some social construct about justice, which I've told you before. The justice of our God is about seeking what's right, not what's wrong. It has nothing to do with making sure that the poor get health care. Oh, it might on some level, but that's not justice. That's not the definition of justice. Justice is doing what's right, which includes, you know, regarding the poor and their estate and trying to help them if you can. But that's an individual mandate, by the way, not a governmental mandate. So it's all a twisting, really. And I have to say that whatever Mr. Scalise comes out with on the other end and the others that were shot and injured and went through the trauma of this, what we pray is that God will reveal to them himself in a more powerful way than ever. And that when they come out on the other side, their hearts and their minds will be adjusted to God's ways. They'll take on the mind of Christ, not the mind of some political construct. And so that's what happened on MSNBC, and the interesting things just keep continuing. We'll come back in just a second because, of course, there's more. There always is. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Before there was a monarchy, prophets, or a church in Scripture. God established the institution of family. He also set the husband and father as the head of the family. The role of men in their families is so important that God honored it by conferring upon us his own title, Father. National revival hinges on the reformation of the American family. As the family goes, so goes society. As the father goes, so goes the family. Wife-loving, family-discipling, warrior fathers, I salute you.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
David Butts of Harvest Prayer Ministries challenges us to see prayer as a gracious gift from God.
Show us, Lord, how to pray with greater effectiveness. Lord, help us to understand more of your heart in our city, in our churches, in our nation, literally around the globe.
The Gift of Prayer is a powerful new DVD that teaches us the importance of prayer. It's a great resource for your church or family. Available for purchase or download from the AFA Cultural Institute at afastore.net.
Jesus of Nazareth was a peasant from a tiny village in a tiny nation. But the history of the world and the fate of each individual hinges on the identity of this Jewish carpenter. Our study called Jesus 101 continues this week on Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at afr.net.
A boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with American Family Association and American Family Radio. That is a highlight of our tour of the Holy Land when we go on the boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. A special time to be on the very water where Jesus walked, where he spent time with his disciples. And you know, in fact, you're the place where Jesus was. So many sights we're going to see in the Holy Land that are just like that. We know Jesus was here. The trip is in March, March 8th through the 16th, and we'd love for you to come with us. So many places we're going to see you've read about since you were a child. For more information, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. If you want a brochure sent to you in the mail, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, extension 5.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Many lives would have been lost if not for the heroic actions of the two Capitol police officers who took down the gunman despite sustaining gunshot wounds during a very, very brutal assault. Melania and I are grateful for their heroism and praying for the swift recovery of all victims. Congressman Scalise is a friend and a very good friend. He's a patriot and he's a fighter. He will recover from this assault. And Steve, I want you to know that you have the prayers not only of the entire city behind you, but of an entire nation, and frankly, the entire world. America is praying for you, and America is praying for all of the victims of this terrible shooting. I spoke with Steve's wife, Jennifer, and I pledged to her our full and absolute support, anything she needs. We're with her and with the entire Scalise family. I have also spoken with Chief Matthew Verderosa. He's doing a fantastic job of the Capitol Police to express our sympathies for his wounded officers and to express my admiration for their courage. Our brave Capitol Police perform a challenging job with incredible skill, and their sacrifice makes democracy possible.
All right, that's just part of President Trump's speech last Wednesday, not long after the shooting had taken place. And that's just part of it, actually. He goes on to say some lovely things. And it just struck me, you know, my husband and I were listening to this in a public waiting room, and were watching it, and there was a man sitting very close to us who started smirking, laughing, when the president started speaking. And I'm thinking, you know, what is funny about that? People, there was almost a mass murder this morning, regardless of how you feel about the politics. And the president comes out and issues sympathy and says that we're praying. My wife and I are praying. All of America is praying. And this is funny. And this is the level, the crassness, really, the division to which we have sunk. In fact, I, you know, you already know because I've told you, and because you're not dumb, you figured it out on your own, that there is such an incredible attempt to get Trump out of office. They just think he should step aside. They think they should be allowed to impeach him. And it's not just the likes of the Black Caucus. It's not just them. It's the mainstream Republicans. I would say it's a lot of Bush supporters in D.C. They are part of the swamp. They just are. They want revenge. They want him out. And so so you're seeing just all kinds of untoward things take place. And there's an article this morning I picked out. I'm not going to go into it, but it's already speculating who Vice President Pence would pick for a vice president. Would it be Paul Ryan? Maybe Mitt Romney? Maybe Bob Gates, maybe John Boehner. You can imagine who's writing this article. And so they're already hoping, salivating, that maybe Vice President Pence would step in. And they've got it all figured out, you see. And so a part of this, of course, goes to this the terrible disrespect of being played. Disrespect doesn't even seem to capture it to me. The violence, the would-be violence, the salivating over the brutal murdering. Potential of President Donald Trump is just amazing to me. From Kathy Griffith holding up the severed head, the fake severed head, thank God, dripping blood, and then suing the Trump family because she said they ruined her life because they criticized her for that. This is supposed to be humor. We all know what Bill Maher has said. I can't repeat it. It's so foul. It's not about death. It's about something that's just so vile and vulgar. Who thinks that way? But they do, and they laugh. And so, of course, now there's this Shakespeare in the Park, and I've heard even on Fox, I hear people defending, oh, this is art, you know, and even though it may not be the best, let it go on. You know, I have to say that even when William Shakespeare wrote this play and depicted the brutal murder of Julius Caesar wasn't king of England. He didn't do this with the king of England, you know, stepping in on the stage as a likeness to Julius Caesar. There is something untoward, absolutely out of bounds, improper, disgusting, morbid. It's like the mobs of Rome to do such a thing. And so with that in mind, there were a couple of young people that went to that production in the park in New York City on Friday night. And boy, you talk about courage. Here's one of them. Her name is Laura Loomer. She's formerly with Project Veritas, as James O'Keefe's organization. Laura actually went up on the stage, and this is what it sounded like.
Stop the normalization of political violence against the right. This is unacceptable. You cannot promote this type of violence against Donald Trump.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to pause.
No, we're not promoting.
We're going to pause.
Yes, you are.
We're
not promoting it. This is violence against the right. This is violence against Donald Trump. Violence against Donald Trump. Shame. Shame on the New York City Public Theater for doing this.
Let's go. Let's go.
You guys. CSIS ISIS. Shame on Kathy Griffin. Shame. Shame on all of you! Shame! Shame on all of you for promoting political violence against Donald Trump! Stop the normalization of political violence!
Stop the normalization of political violence. You are inciting violence against Donald Trump. That's what she said on the stage, and of course she was pulled off. And of course she's going to criticize for that. I have to say, if I were there that night, I might have gone up on the stage with her. I might have. I can't imagine me going to that play. But it would be, I couldn't have sat through it. How can people do that? I feel that way in the theater. When you go into the theater and you see all of this horrible violence on the screen or these vile acts and people sit quietly and watch passively, I don't understand that. I've never understood that because your quiet passivity is approval. It is nothing more than approval. And so while Laura was doing that, then another gentleman, his name is Jack Posobiel. Jack, his background. I don't know what Jack's background is, but he also was in the audience, and he had other things slightly different to say, but this is how it sounded.
Freedom.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to pause. We're going to pause. Security. Security, please.
Nazis like Joseph Goebbels. This is Goebbels. You are all Goebbels. You are inciting terrorists. The blood of Steve Scalise is on your hands. The blood of Steve Scalise is on your hands. Goebbels would be proud. Goebbels would be proud. Goebbels would be proud.
Come this way.
Sir, Goebbels would be proud.
Sir,
grab yourself. Goebbels would be proud. Goebbels would be proud. Goebbels would be proud. Nazis.
Sir,
you
going.
Are
sir.
Nazis.
Please
Goebbels, would be, Goebbels would be proud. Goebbels would be proud. Goebbels would be proud.
All right, Goebbels, that was the designer of all of Hitler, not of all, but his. He was in charge of all the atrocities that the Hitler regime came up with against people. And that's why saying Goebbels would be proud. He's also saying you are all Nazis. You are all Nazis. The blood of Steve Scalise is on your hands. You know what? I don't have a quarrel with that. I don't have a quarrel with that. Where is decency? Where is our decency? And the problem, I think, with our culture is that no one ever calls anyone out. Everything is okay. You can behave the way you want. You can wear what you want, not wear what you don't want. You can, understand. I understand free speech, but free speech only goes so far. When it starts creating violence or hurting other people, we have limits on free speech, like yelling fire in a theater. If you're doing a production that shows the violent, brutal murder of your president, and you sit there quietly and say that it's really, by your presence, say that it's okay, and meanwhile, you know there are very real threats and people have just been shot and nearly killed, you have a responsibility. I got no problem with what they did. I'm sure you'll be hearing about it, and I'm sure that's a controversial position, but I swear we have to be honest with each other, and we have to call this out. People are becoming violent. They are becoming the mobs of Rome. The mobs of Rome used to go into the stadium and watch people, especially Christians, but not just Christians, be brutally murdered by animals, stabbed, dismembered, whatever, drawn and quartered, while they ate their snacks and cheered and yelled for more brutality. What is the difference, I ask you? What is the difference? And so that's the response. That's kind of where we are until we can, if there's any way that the people of God can be the people of God to this world and remind them. I actually thought in the videos that I saw of Laura and Jack disrupting that play that there were people. There was a lot of noise there, but there were a lot of people not making noise. There were a lot of people in that audience that I think heard what they had to say and had to have stopped to think about what they were doing, maybe for the first time, because no one ever brings it to their attention. All right, so, but then on the matter of what's actually happening to Donald Trump, that's not violent, but it is an attempt to overthrow and destroy his presidency, comes to mind an article in The American Thinker by Steve McCann called The Rise and Fall of James Comey. Now, while I was gone last week, honestly, I can't recall. I was, of course, trying to keep up with everything as best I could. There was a great article by Molly Hemingway on the friendship between Comey and Bob Mueller, and it's pretty appalling, the things that they partnered to do, and they have a pattern of trying to destroy people where there's no actual there. One of the stories is about Frank Quattrone, a well-known and successful investment banker. And in 2003, Comey, as the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, was unable to find sufficient evidence to press criminal bank fraud charges. And instead, he pursued supposed obstruction of justice based on one specious email. During the investigation and indictment process, Comey made false statements about Quattrone and the intent of the email. And while winning a conviction at trial, the verdict was soon overturned on appeal. So do you hear what just happened? And so Frank Quattrone, as I understand it, went on to found, he felt he was so deeply wounded, nearly destroyed by this, that he started an organization for people who had been destroyed by false prosecutions. And then there's the case of Martha Stewart. You know, who loves Martha Stewart? I love her stuff. I'm not a fan. She's a lefty. She's a leftist, a liberal. But still, it seems as Comey was at the heart of pursuing insider trading charges against her, which could not be proven. And then he claimed that, Comey claimed that Stewart's public protestations of innocence were designed solely to prop up the stock price of her own company. And then he claimed that she obstructed justice by making false statements to a federal official. So Alan Reynolds of the Cato Institute put it this way: Stewart was prosecuted for having misled people by denying having committed a crime and with which she was not charged. Even the New York Times described the entire process as petty and vindictive, but that was James Comey. In January 2004, he was appointed to United States Deputy Attorney General, and he went on to do the same thing. And this is a case I know a lot about. I covered this one in great detail when I was on the radio in Chicago, and that was the supposed leak of CIA operative Valerie Plame's name. Comey was assigned to this. He convinced Attorney General John Ashcroft to recuse himself based on a dubious potential conflict of interest rationale. Hear anything familiar? Any themes emerge? So John Ashcroft recused himself. Then he appointed his close personal friend Patrick Fitzgerald, who we also knew well in Chicago. He became special counsel. And then they found out within a matter of maybe 2 weeks that Richard Armitage, who was with the Obama State Department, actually leaked Valerie Plame's name. It wasn't anyone else. But we know now from writings of various things that they were actually after Vice President Cheney. This was James Comey's goal. And along with Patrick Fitzgerald, they fancied themselves champions to take him down. And so one thing led to another. In the end, Scooter Libby, who was Cheney's chief of staff, was convicted of various dubious perjury and obstruction of justice charges. He actually went to prison. But the damage to the second term of the Bush administration was insurmountable. By the way, it was the Bush administration. I'm sorry, not the Obama. Honest Jim Comey became a champion of truth and justice to the left and the mainstream media. Molly actually tracks the number of cases that James Comey and Director Mueller worked on together and how close they were and how they had done similar things, going after people with very little evidence and making a case and bringing people down in ways that they should never have been punished because there was no real law broken. But in the process, they tried to find laws that were broken. It really is parallel to what we see happening right now. Then in this article in The American Thinker, which we'll put on our Facebook page, The Rise and Fall of James Comey. In 2013, Barack Obama decided to nominate James Comey as the FBI director to replace Comey's close friend Mueller. The mainstream media was effusive, but the Wall Street Journal said any potential FBI director deserves scrutiny since the position has so much power and is susceptible to ruinous misjudgments and abuse. That goes double for Mr. Comey, a nominee who seems to think the job of the federal bureaucracy is to oversee elected officials, not the other way around, and who had his own hand in some of the worst prosecutorial excesses of the past decade. So now we have a situation where they're trying to bring this president down, some by a bloody coup, others by inside the beltway shenanigans. I think the president should absolutely get rid of the special counsel and do it right away. I totally disagree with others that say it would be a mistake. What more could they do to him? This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.